Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
So we continue with this journey on understanding living the unity way, or the unity way of living. And, you know, really trying to get a better understanding of this process, this trip of to spirituality that we're all on. You know, you think about the purpose of Christianity as studied in unity, it is really to reveal the Christ in Jesus. But it's also to understand that Jesus was trying to help reveal with us the Christ within ourselves. So a lot of times in maybe our previous Christian experiences, we've learned about Jesus Christ and that Jesus was the Christ, but Jesus was trying to get us to understand that we also are the Christ. That is probably the biggest challenge for us. You know, we can usually see the highest good in someone else and not always able to see the highest good in ourselves. And Jesus' job was to get us to know that we are also the Christ. And that's the whole process of the whole New Thought movement. So New Thought means bringing a new thought to the idea of Christianity, that we are the experience that Jesus was trying to get us to see. And this is not to negate the fact that there are other paths to truth. Like, we know, we do not forsake the way of the Hindu or the Buddhist or the Jew or the Muslim or the Yogi or the Baha'i or the indigenous cultures of Native Americans who have a very close connection to nature and to Mother Earth. But in unity, we embrace all the paths of truth. It's just that we translate them for ourselves through the teachings of Jesus. Did that make sense? All right. So unity, true students pursue the path of practical Christianity. We are basically what you call practical Christians. Now, the word practical means governed by or acquired through practice or action rather than theory, speculation, or simply the espousing of ideas. In other words, practical Christianity is you have to be able to walk the talk. All right. So you're not just talking about what you believe, but you are a living demonstration of that which you say you believe, right? So the word practical refers to being involved in a certain kind of work where you practice daily to become proficient in that work. It's just like the thing I loved the most when I was doing these trips is that this camera that I have is very complex in terms of all the things you can do with it. There were so many things to shoot and so many different things to work with that in those 8 days I got a lot of practice and using all of those different techniques. So it's that you're practicing something until it becomes second nature to you. So we want to reach a point where we're living the truth, where living the truth is how we show up in the world. So we don't talk about it, we demonstrate it, we are it. And it's the mission of the truth movement and the mission of unity and the mission of this center to provide the spiritual teachings that will raise our consciousness to a level where we can discover the truth for ourselves. In other words, we're not just being told what the truth is, but you're hearing ideas that will eventually awaken the truth within yourself. It's that whole idea about, you know, you heard me say 1,000 times, to educate doesn't mean for the teacher to teach, but to awaken in the student that which the student already knows. So it's getting to the idea of understanding that we already know all of this, but when we hear it, it wakes it up inside of us. I mean, how many people have heard that experience? Like, I knew that already. You know, I knew it, but I didn't know I knew it. All right, until you heard it, and all of a sudden, it wakes it up inside of you. So, and the truth that we're working with is the mission of this center, that there is a power within you that's far greater than anything that exists outside of you. Actually, the daily word today, read by Betty, and the songs that we sang all had to do with the way we're going to look at this idea today. But the key here, to know this, really know it, we have to practice learning how to live from the inside out. Basically, right now, a lot of what we do is from the outside in. There's stimuli, and then we react to it, right? And, you know, as Carl Jung says, there's two ways you react. It's either how do I think about it, and then how does it make me feel? Or some people go the other way, how do I feel about it, and how does that make me think? But either way, it ends up that we allow outside stimuli to change our inside dynamic. Well, what we want to learn how to do is work from our inside out, okay? So this is what Jesus was trying to convey. The value of life comes not from having much, but from being much. And of course, the law also holds that he or she who becomes much in consciousness also ultimately will have much. So that goes back to which, you know, the verse, it's in Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. So once I gain the consciousness for what I want, then that just keeps coming to me. Does that make sense? You heard me talk about Paramahansa Yogananda before when he came to the United States, said I need buildings to do what I need to do. But he had such a consciousness for it that he got more buildings than he could use. So, you know, when you say I don't have enough of this or this is not working for me, it's typically not working because something inside of you is not attracting it. Something inside of you can actually be repelling it. You say, I want this, but you have an inner dynamic that's pushing that which you want away from you. So it's always looking at what's going on inside. However, it's not the journey towards outer accomplishments that stifle our spiritual awareness, because it's our passionate endeavor in life to bring, you know, we want to have things that are exciting, you know, like the trip that Pam and I just took, or, you know, the things that happen in our lives that make us really exciting. We want to have those things in our life. So it's not those accomplishments that stifle our spirituality, but rather it's when we travel the road towards our outer endeavors in a state of fear, worry, anxiety, frustration. That's what stifles that spiritual inspiration that could be the guiding light to get us to what we want. So it's like you said, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to happen. But if you have a lot of fear around that or anxiety or worry, that blocks the flow. Does that make sense? Okay. So what we want to do is we want to get to a place where we can discover that in truth, all the good we attain and all the good we could ever want comes from a heavenly source rather than an earthly source. All right. So that's the sort of the key to the process. Now, one who is grounded in truth knows that there's never any need for fear and worry or anxiety or frustration. You know, so you say, this is what I want to happen in my life. And you sort of have this knowing that it has already what? Happened. All right? That's sort of the key. Not is it going to happen, but it has already happened. That's why you have to be careful of that process, because my thoughts are prayers and I'm always praying. All right? So you got to keep your mind focused on what you want and not on what you do not want. So Jesus' response to fearful thinking is, your Father knows what you need. If you would just do the inner work to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, all these things you want and need will be yours as well. Now, we've heard that saying many, many times. The key is we've heard it, but did we really hear it? And how many times do we need to hear it before we really hear it? Does that make sense? That's why, you know, I could probably say the same thing every single Sunday, and every Sunday somebody would go, oh, I just got it. All right? Matter of fact, guys, when I'm writing these talks, it causes me to get it. All right? I'm like, oh, I just got what that really meant. You know? So, but the real deal is we are actually evolving in our conscious understanding of the spiritual journey, spiritual conscious. We are evolving. So, you know, if you think to yourself, I really haven't gotten it yet, you really have gotten it. You know what I'm saying? If you keep hearing it, eventually it begins to evolve in your consciousness, even if you don't feel like you're really living it. You know, think about how your children learn the alphabet. It was cute and wonderful when they first recited the alphabet. Oh, that's so cute. All right. They can do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. All right. But there came a time when the child was expected to form words from the alphabet, then sentences, then paragraphs, then complex word formations to be able to express certain points, okay? So I can still remember when my first granddaughter called me years and years ago, and she said she was talking to me on the telephone. She was very, very little, and she said that I have a new pet. And then she said, well, actually, I have three new pets. And at her age, the use of the word actually to make her point seemed to me to be beyond her way to communicate. It's like our Callista, when she was five, I think I told you this story. Her mother was driving her to work, and they were late. Did I tell you that story? Yeah, they were late, and the mother said, I know there was traffic. She said, this is going to make me later. And Callista, 5 years old, sitting in the back, says, Mom, you used that word in the wrong context. You can be late, but you cannot be later, right? So Adina gets to work, and she says, who here knows English? So raise your hand. He says, my daughter just told me that my use of the word later was wrong. I said I would be make me later, and they said, yeah, that wasn't right. You know, she just, and when Dean was talking to her, she turned the radio up to high so she couldn't hear herself being scolded by her five-year-old. Yeah. So, you know, we're very impressed by our children as their consciousness expands in the ability of the use of language. But at the same time, we expect it, and we will be greatly disappointed if their ability to use language didn't expand. You get it? So you expect it, but you would be disappointed if it didn't happen. Well, it's the same thing with the spiritual process, okay? The evolution of our consciousness is the same. Just like a child, when we hear, a child hears, practices, integrates the principles of language, and it becomes an integral part of their way of expressing in life, so it must be for us. We hear, practice, integrate the principles of spirituality, and it becomes an integral part of our consciousness. It's the same exact process. So if you're still just espousing truth, but you're not living truth, you're not demonstrating truth, then there's a retardation happening in your expanding process. Does that all make sense? Okay. So, and as you know, true students, we want to become aware of the mental indicators, signs and signals that can help us to realize the state of our consciousness and the mindset we're functioning from. In other words, you really want to pay attention to what you're thinking, what's coming out of your mouth, and what you're doing. Because those are mental indicators of where you really are. Okay? Now, fear, worry, anxiety, frustration, those are the big ones. The incessant need to be right is another big one. All right? And, you know, and these are clear indications that we're operating under a fearful, willful mind. And being in a willful state of mind keeps us from discovering the Christ within ourselves, because the ego is keeping us in a state of mind while we're saying, this is where I want to be. Does that make sense? Okay. So why is it difficult for us to let go and let God be in charge of our lives? Why are we so committed to imposing our will on everything? Now, is that just me or is it? Okay. Yeah. You know, we really do. We impose our will on everything. Now, the explanation from the dictionary of will may explain this. It explains that will is used to indicate certainty. In our need to be in control of our lives, certainty gives us a level of confidence. So that's why we are willful, because we basically want some kind of control in what's happening in our lives, all right? So there's a certain sense of strength and security that comes from exercising our will in our lives, not only in ourselves, but on everyone around us, okay? However, embedded in our certainty of our incessant need to control things and people through the projection of our will, there's also the certainty of fear. So we are willful because we are fearful. We are fearful that we don't have control over certain situations that are happening, okay? And ironically, there is a certainty of fear even when you feel a certainty of success or strength, all right? Our will always has embedded within it fear and worry that something can happen. So even when things are going well, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, what might happen, okay? Or how long is this going to last? Exactly, okay? So also think about how our will has us believing there's a particular way things must happen. So even when we pray, we are praying, saying to God, my will, not thy will be done. We're not actually saying that, But we're actually in the prayer, we're saying, this is what I want to happen. Well, the universe is so vast that it could bring it to you in a way that you could never even conceive of. But our mind is saying, but I want it to happen like this. Am I right? Okay. Even if we're not thinking that's what we're thinking, a lot of times that is what we're thinking, that we're looking for things to happen in a certain way. And again, that's the willfulness, because the certainty of it happening this way makes us feel in control. And it gives us some sense of well-being. So our will always has embedded in this idea. So the mere threat of fear can block us from going within to the faith and comfort of our inner Christ. This is because the certainty of fear, the certainty of the threat of fear keeps us outer focused. And we're always looking outside to figure out, how do I manage this outside? As opposed to the process of going within and allowing yourself to be guided to that process. So, yes, you can see it. The leper comes to Jesus. The blind person comes to Jesus. Yes, he sees he has leprosy or that she is blind. He sees that. But then he immediately goes within to become still for the guidance into how to deal with that. Now, Jesus probably knew how to deal with it, but he still took the time to go within. How do we know, especially in that incident when he went down and doodled in the sand? So doodling in the sand is sort of the idea of, what do I do? What mechanism do I personally use? Everybody picks their own mechanism to go within, to become still and listen. How many people have heard guidance, didn't really know it was guidance, ignored it, went and did something else, and then realize that you have been given the answer earlier, but you just didn't pay attention to it. Okay? So the guy, say it again. You did. Oh, Margaret hit it right on the head. A lot of times the guidance we get is not the guidance we want to hear. We don't want to do it that way. Our willful ego says, no, I want to do it this way. Okay? So the key here is learning to be able to submit to that inner guidance. When you hear it, when it comes up, be with it for a while. Because it might be the ego trying to play like it's inner guidance. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the ego says, oh, he or she wants some inner guidance. I can play that game. And that will give you something, But yeah, so you have to become still to hear if that's really the guidance that you're looking for. Now, what is interesting to note is that all of our fear and worry and anxiety and frustration are indicator that we have a longing for intimate awareness or connection with our inner spirit. You get it? See, we never thought about that. We never said that I'm worried because what I really want is a connection with spirit. We just say I'm worried because somebody says, why are you worried? You don't say, well, I'm worried because I want an inner connection with my inner spirit. So I'm worried because this is going on and that's going on and this is happening. All right? But all of this process is really because you have this desire to go within. And we don't translate it that way, but that's the idea. And not only are we unconsciously looking for a connection with spirit, but we need to understand that spirit is always looking for a connection with us. But the only way it can get that, the only language that God knows is silence. So when you're talking to God and you're saying all these things, what was it on the TV show Yellowstone. Anybody watching Yellowstone on TV with Kevin Costner? That's really good if you're not watching. And he's sitting somewhere. He's, dying of, he has cancer. And he says, and he's not a spiritual man. Not at all, right? But and he says, God, I can't go through this right now. I've got too much to do. I said to Pam, look at him now talking to God. Now that he's at, in this situation, right? Yeah, dying of cancer, right, But the idea was he was trying to make that connection out of desperation, but what he didn't realize, what we don't realize, is when we're in that desperate state, we have to understand that God is trying to make that connection with us. God is always trying to make that connection with us. But the connection can come only when you speak the language of God, and the language of God is absolute silence. And ironically, we come to those points at different times in our lives. Some tragedy happens and we kind of get it. But as soon as we get through that tragedy, we have a tendency to forget it and go back to our old way of being. So this is why embedded in every lesson, there's a reference to the extreme importance of just being still and listening and allowing the connection to occur. So now we know, as we are seeking God, God is seeking a connection with God. God is seeking a connection with us. But the only way that connection can come is when we allow ourselves to be still and listen. Now, Charles Fillmore says we get a good idea of the meaning of the will of God when we think of that will as the ceaseless longing of the Creator to perfect itself in that which it created. You get it? So from a scientific point, from scientists, they say the invisible is constantly trying to become visible, or the unmanifest is constantly trying to become manifest. Well, the way the unmanifest becomes manifest is within us that which it created. Is that, you with it? Okay. And so the only way you can allow that to happen is to learn how to be still. Okay. And just think, this idea about, you know, that's why Jesus said, you know, you must not worry about, do not worry about your life. All right. Now, just think, don't worry. What a concept. Okay. Can you even visualize the concept of living life without worrying about something? A life where you live in the constant state of divine knowing that all in your life is unfolding in a good and wonderful way. So the idea of not worry is to be able to live in divine knowing. I don't know how this is going to work out, but I do know it's going to work out for my highest good and the good of everyone involved. That's a divine knowing, okay? Now, as we are, we probably cannot understand this idea of living life without worrying, as we are, okay? But according to Dr. Carl Jung, we actually are predisposed to live our lives under God's will instead of our own. We are predisposed to live our lives under God's will instead of our own. And this is what it says in the book, An Introduction to Jung's Psychology by Frieda Fordham. She says, the study of the archetypes of the collective unconscious has led Jung to some interesting conclusions. One of the most important of these is that humans possess what is called a natural religious function, and that our psychic health and stability depend on the proper expression of that function. So he's saying within the psyche of the human mind, there is a natural religious function. If we're not operating according to that natural religious function, then we have psychosis and neurosis. You follow me? Because we're not living according to how we were designed. Does that make sense? Okay. So, and I repeat again, he's saying that you must become aware that you have this natural religious function within you. So it is natural for us, innate within us, to surrender our will to God's will. Further, Jung is saying we would not be surrendering to something foreign. So to surrender to God is not surrendering to something foreign. You're surrendering to the truth within yourself. And I think, if you think about it, I think a lot of us thought when we were surrendering to God, we're surrendering to something up there. You're not surrendering to something up there. You're surrendering to the true you, to the real you, the Christ you. All right? So it is an inner process, and we want to understand that process. Now, Jesus wrote, wrote about Jesus in John 17:4, and now, Father, glorify me with thy presence, with the glory which I had with thee before the world was made. Now, when you first heard that, you probably thought Jesus was saying with the glory I had with you before the earth came into being. Okay, but what it typically means is bring me back to the relationship I had with you before my ego came to be, before my own willfulness came to be. And you can hear it in what he says. And now, Father, glorify thou me. So it's not that Jesus is saying, well, you know, I knew God before I was born. Jesus is saying, I knew God, and when I was born, I forgot that knowing when I developed my own persona. Okay? Now, let me just be clear that we need these personas. All right? Otherwise, I'd be looking at a bunch of light waves out there, and you'd be looking at a light wave up here. All right? So we need so the personas are important, but the purpose of the persona is to be the instrument through which the Christ can express, through which God can express, through which the invisible can press out into the visible. Is that making sense? Okay. So, and again, that's how we came into the world, but we forgot that. All right. Now, we hold on to our willfulness for dear life because it is close, it's familiar. It's who we believe we are. I mean, even hearing this talk, we can't go, well, I'm not Butch, and I'm not Joy, I'm not, you know, I'm not these people, I'm not this person. Okay, it's hard to say I'm not me. Right? Remember my friend Charlie Miller, being stopped by the cops, and yeah, right? Yeah, that's me, right? It's hard not to say this is who I am, okay? It's not hard not to realize that there is a deeper sense of who you are than, I forgot the writer said, than what's between your hat and your boots. Okay, there's more to us than that, all right? So we struggle to find the Christ within ourselves because we do not remember who we are, and we do not remember where we came from, and we can't remember our way back. Okay. Now, one of the main points of the story of the prodigal son is, yes, the prodigal son left his father's house, went out into the world, squandered all of his wealth, you know, and he went into a foreign land. This is important. He went into a foreign land. But the key is he remembered where home was. All right. And when he found himself struggling and worrying about life, he knew how to get back to where everything he ever wanted would be given to him. Okay, we are the prodigal son or the prodigal daughter. We're out here squandering our wealth. Wealth is not our finances. We're squandering our spiritual abilities, the spiritual essence of who we really are. The key here we want to begin to understand is no matter how well our life is going, it is almost certain that we're not living, that we're living according to our own will, and that we're worried about something. And perhaps many things. We're worried because we're living in a foreign land. So when you say to yourself, think to yourself, who's worried about something right now? All hands probably should go up, right? There's something we're all worried about right now. So now what you say to yourself, the reason why I'm worried is because I'm living in a foreign land. And I can't remember how to get back home. All right? That's the whole key to it. All right, and you know, if we paraphrase Jesus' teaching, it says, do not worry about your life. If you are worried about your life, it is because you are in a foreign land. Leave the foreign land of your will and return home to your heavenly Father. And if you do, everything you ask for will be given to you. The foreign land being the thinking that has us believing the Father and I are not one. The foreign land is a thinking and has us believing the Father and I are not one. Now you'll say, no, I know that the Father and I are one. And then if you start to talk and you hear all the things you're worried about in life, you're saying one thing and demonstrating another. Does that make sense? So the key here is to catch yourself and go, you know, and it'll be legitimate. Something will be happening. It'll be legitimate, right? Anybody listening to you go, whoa, yeah, you're in trouble. Right? And it'll be legitimate, but the key still here is realizing, yes, I'm worried about this, but it's because I'm living in a foreign land. I'm living in the land of my ego. And I, right in this moment, I can't remember how to get back. It's another show we're watching where these six people woke up on a spaceship and they don't remember who they are. They don't remember who each other is. They don't remember nothing. And their memories are starting to come back and it's some horrible things they're remembering. And one of them says to the other, he says, but you have to understand, those are memories. They happen in the past. What you do now is you create new memories and new ways of being for the future. And a lot of us are still living back at those horrific things that happen in our lives, and we can't get ourselves to leave that point. Okay? So that's the key, is yes, it happened. What just ask, what do you learn from it? And get yourself together to move on and create new memories, new ways of being, right? So the prodigal son knew that at his father's house, there was such great wealth that there was no inkling of worry because the wealth was so vast. I mean, you know, that's described in the Bible. He had hundreds of sheep and goats and, you know, they just name all the stuff that he had. It was just a massive amount of wealth that he had, okay? And you know there was a and it was such that he couldn't comprehend ever running out of it. Well, we don't blame or judge ourselves for wandering off. We have to understand that same wealth that is described for the prodigal son is ours, so vast that we could not even comprehend it. when we were in Wyoming, they were talking about a ranch that was for sale. 10,000 acres, $68 million. 10,000 acres. Yeah, right. But I mean, can you understand what I'm saying? For us, you know, we're living on our little half acre here, you know. Can you even picture what 10,000 acres looks like? And they were saying this one family, they've had these, it was a ranch, which means, you know, raising cows. It's been in their family for generations, and they have no expense because the land is so vast that the cows just eat off the land, and they have unlimited water, so they have no expense. You know, doesn't that sound like unlimited wealth? You know, it's just massive amount of wealth. Well, we have that kind of wealth within us. It is unmanifest, waiting to become manifest. And the way it moves through that process of becoming from unmanifest to manifest, it has to move through our consciousness. It pours into the memory, the cookie cutter coal of our mind, which is our thoughts. And it is infinite potential at that point. When it pours into the mold or the cookie cutter mold in your mind, it takes on the shape of that mold. So whatever you really want in your life, you have to hold that mold. So when that virtual reality pours into the quantum realm, it'll take on and begin manifesting in the way that you want it to. Is that? Yeah. But I mean, still, it's a process you can understand. You know, it's a process we can hold on to, all right? And you know, it may be helpful to understand that unlike the father and the prodigal son, God the Father is not a singular figure that directs our behavior. God the Father is the divine love in whom we live and breathe and have our being. This divine presence is a place within us that is so engaging that once we enter into it, we are motivated to allow it to become to take over all the thoughts and worries we have in our world and just become at peace. So once you truly, and everybody in this room has had that experience. You have entered into that place, probably, you know, not on purpose. And then you realize you're there and you go, whoa, and then the ego pops you right back out. And then you say, wait a minute, I want to get back to that place. And you can't, all right? But over practice, you can begin to learn your way back home. That's why I keep recommending that book, The Journey Home by Kryon. The Journey Home by Kryon. It's a parable about a young man who gets hit in the head in the street. And what is really happening is while he's unconscious, he's dreaming this dream of all of the levels he has to go through to get back home. And when he finally gets home, of course, he discovers he was really looking for the truth of himself. But it's a great, once you get into it, you can't let it go. All right, so as we prepare ourselves for meditation, meditation, let's contemplate this question. Am I ready? Am I ready to surrender my will and return home to my Heavenly Father? Amen.